This podcast contains disturbing accounts of intrafamily violence and trauma. If you or anyone you know are in need of support, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by calling 1-800-799-SAFE or chatting with an advocate at www.thehotline.org. Again, that's 1-800-799-SAFE or www.thehotline.org.
Standing emergency. What's the standing emergency?
My mommy is just having a fight.
Is she getting hurt?
From the National Judicial Institute on Domestic Violence, this is Centering Children, a discussion with child psychology experts on helping children exposed to domestic violence heal and thrive. I'm your host, Aaron Polke. Joining us are two psychologists from the Center for Research and Education on Violence Against Women and Children, a center at Western University, London, Ontario, Canada, Drs. Peter Jaffe and Linda Baker. Judges and court-related professionals who work in this field know well the definition of domestic violence, but for this particular child and for all children who have these experiences, what does it mean to be exposed to this type of violence?
Well, Erin, this little girl is directly experiencing a domestic violence incident. She's hearing what's going on in her home. She's upset. You can tell by her voice on the call. And she knows that something is happening to her mother in another part of the home. But when we use the term exposure, we use it because it captures the full range of ways that children experience domestic violence in their families. So not all children experience it directly in the way the little girl did that we heard in that clip. Some children aren't present during the incident, but they may come home from school or a friend's home and experience the aftermath of the violence. They may see a parent's injuries or damaged possessions, or they may feel the tension in the air. Another way children are exposed is by being used by abusive individuals as part of the abusive control over their partner. For example, a mother's compliance to not call the police or seek medical assistance following an assault may be coerced by threats to harm the children or by withholding the children from her.
Dr. Jaffe?
And this exposure to domestic violence may not end with separation. In fact, it may continue. So one can think about having an exchange, a visitation exchange between parents where there's a history of domestic violence, and children may continue to see and hear conflict and domestic violence that's taking place. Even when they're in a new home, for example, the abuser may have a new partner and the violence may continue in that relationship. Children may also be affected in other ways. There may be, for example, economic abuse of the mother, therefore depriving the child of, you know, their basic needs in one of the homes. So the domestic violence can take multiple forms. And obviously we can't forget there's extreme cases, and about 10% of domestic homicides across the U.S., a child is killed in the context of that violence. So these children, their lives are at risk. And even if they survive, they may actually be part of the most traumatic event possible. They're seeing or hearing their mother being killed and dealing with that aftermath. So we're dealing with very profound trauma that affects children forever.
Now, when domestic violence happens in the child's home, it happens behind closed doors. So how do we know that a child has been exposed to domestic violence?
Thankfully, there have been some excellent public campaigns and professional training on domestic violence that have helped people to better recognize, respond, and refer individuals affected by domestic violence for support. A child's exposure to domestic violence may come to the attention of a concerned neighbor or an extended family member. A health or mental health professional may learn of the abuse when they are seeing a child for another presenting problem, such as depression or difficulties at school. Or a teacher or early childhood educator, remembering that they spend almost as much time with children as families do in some cases, they see children consistently and for large blocks of time, and they may notice a marked change in a student's functioning or receive a disclosure about the abuse at home.
Would you like to add anything, Dr. Jaffe?
Another source of information may be from police reports. For example, if the police are called to a home where there's domestic violence, as part of their records, they may include detailed descriptions of the children at the scene and how the children have been impacted. And these issues also come up in both family and criminal court proceedings. Obviously, in family proceedings, there may be a custody and visitation dispute around the potential parenting plan. So allegations of domestic violence or the impact of domestic violence on children may be raised. These issues are also raised in criminal proceedings. It could be raised in extreme cases where children may be a witness and become a court witness, or cases where there's an issue of sentencing where the impact of the violence on the children is being considered by the court as part of a sentencing proceeding. The children may also be reported to child protection if a teacher or a family member is concerned about children's welfare and worried about them being caught in the middle. There may be a report. When I think about all these kinds of reports, it's clear that public and professional education is critical, because those who work with children and families need to understand the dynamics of domestic violence and how it affects children, as well as the immediate front line, which obviously is friends, family, and neighbors, needing to know how to best recognize these issues, respond, and help the family get referrals for assistance.
You mentioned those who work with children and who are concerned with children who are exposed to violence generally, and many in the field are concerned that all experiences of violence that children may encounter are underreported. How does underreporting look when it comes specifically to children who are exposed to domestic violence?
Well, we know that domestic violence in general is underreported. Most adult victims do not report to the police or to agencies that may be seen as having the authority to intervene. There are a range of reasons for not reporting, including fear of and distrust in authorities. For instance, Black, Indigenous, and people of color may have fear based on historical and ongoing experiences of discrimination and violence. Victims may also fear that their children will be removed or believe that they will be at greater risk of more severe domestic violence if they report. It follows that children's exposure to domestic violence is also underreported, and there are many reasons for children themselves not telling anyone about what's going on in their home. For instance, children may be frightened of reprisal by the abusive parent. We often hear children say, "I knew I'd get it if I told." Or they might be fearful of getting a loved one in trouble. Most children want what they call the fighting, that is the domestic violence, to stop, but they don't want to necessarily get a parent in trouble. Older children often are embarrassed by the stigma of domestic violence that exists in society and worry their friends or others might find out about what's going on in their home. And of course, some children are just too young. They don't have the verbal skills to share what is happening and are less likely to be in touch with people outside of their home. We sometimes refer to children in this age grouping as being in the invisible years. We do have estimates of the number of children exposed to domestic violence, and these estimates come from general population surveys on victimization and data from specific sources like shelters for abused women, police reports, and child protection files.
Now, when a family has to appear in court There could be all sorts of things going on with that family, and all sorts of reasons to have to engage with the court system. So when the family is engaging with the court system, can you talk to us a little bit about how that specifically impacts children when the family is engaging in the court system? Dr. Jaffe?
Well, Aaron, even though we're focusing on domestic violence as obviously a critical issue to consider in terms of the impact on children, obviously there's often multiple stressors and impacts on children. For example, there may be not only issues with domestic violence, but there may be parental mental health problems, parental substance abuse. A parent may be incarcerated. There may be basic challenges in survival in terms of housing and food. And a lot of the research we know that's been done across the U.S. looks at multiple impacts of these different kinds of adversities. And we know from the research that these different stressors have a cumulative impact on children's lives. And clearly, the more stressors a child is facing, the greater the challenges they're going to face in terms of both short-term and then long-term adjustment, including emotional and behavioral problems. You know, as a judge, when you're hearing these cases, it can be difficult to sort through what part of this is domestic violence and what part of this is dealing with separation and other parental problems. So clearly we have to consider all the factors and the impact on children, but we do know for sure that domestic violence does have significant impact on children's short-term and long-term adjustment.
Judges and other court officials have a lot of control, a lot of power to lead what goes on in courthouses, what goes on in their courtrooms. So if a judge is concerned about the impact of domestic violence on children, as I'm sure all judges are, what should they take into consideration? What actions should judges and other court officials take? Or what do they need to know specifically to make sure that they're mitigating the impact of domestic violence on children?
I think judges want to be leaders and make sure everyone in the courthouse understands the impact of domestic violence on children. Part of that impact is understanding how domestic violence undermines a child's sense of stability, the nurturance they're receiving, the security, and the importance of having community support that really makes sure that children have the best opportunity for healthy development. We also need to understand that children are affected at every age and stage of development. Whether a child is at a stage of infancy or early childhood or adolescence, children are all impacted at every age and stage of development. Individual children may have different impacts according to where they are in their SIB order. Children may be different whether the youngest or the oldest in the family. They may have different temperaments and coping capacity. So we know that the impact may be unique and vary according to the severity and frequency of the violence, and also the extent to which children have protective factors such as supportive relationships within their family and in the community. We know the impact may be visible and obvious from the children's reaction, or it may be a delayed impact. We're most concerned about longer-term adjustment difficulties and recognizing that being exposed to domestic violence itself can lead to post-traumatic stress disorder, and children may develop significant trauma symptoms, both in the short-term and the long-term.
Now, you mentioned that children are impacted at every stage of development. Is there any particular stage of development when they are most negatively impacted? Dr. Baker?
This is a question we're frequently asked by judges, actually. The bottom line is that we worry about the impacts of exposure to domestic violence at every developmental stage. Having said that, concerns about some impacts exist across all stages, for example, distress, upset, learning about the unhealthy relationships from the family that you're in, or disruption to routines. While some impacts are more strongly associated with a particular developmental stage, for instance, infants are particularly vulnerable to disruptions in the attachment process that are associated with compromises in brain development. And we know that such compromises can disadvantage the developing child's ability to regulate their emotions and behaviors. Whereas in adolescents, our concerns shift and center more on impacts such as dating violence as they begin to have their own relationships and coping through substance use and early leaving from home and school. Perhaps most concerning is the cumulative impacts of repeated exposure over time and across developmental stages, especially when exposure is co-occurring, as Peter described, with other adversities. For example, an area of increasing focus is the long-term developmental impact of cumulative traumatic experiences on mental health, so depression and anxiety, and physical health, such as cardiovascular difficulties, and that we worry and see this happening across the lifespan.
When we think about domestic violence, we tend to focus specifically on a relationship, two adult intimate partners who are being challenged in their relationship by domestic violence. Well, how does it impact other relationships within the family?
Well, the family is a system, and it's made up of a constellation of individuals and their relationships. And domestic violence affects the whole family system, every individual in that family, and all the relationships within the family. So the parent-to-parent relationships, the parent-to-child connections, and sibling relationships, and even relationships with extended family members. So we can take an example, and an older sibling may play more of a protective parental role with a younger brother or sister to try to shield them from the impacts of what's going on in their home. Some siblings may adopt the aggressive behaviors that they're seeing being modeled in their home, and they may actually be hurtful towards their brothers and sisters. In terms of parent-child relationships, we often see there's an erosion of a child's trust in the parent-child bond, and that bond may be negatively affected. They may feel that their parent or parents can't protect them, or they may feel that there's not predictability in what's going to happen. And that's concerning, because that basic erosion of trust in terms of relationships within the family may be generalized outside of the family as well.
What more do we need to know about that, Dr. Jaffe?
I want to pick up on Linda's point, because we often overlook how domestic violence affects parenting. And I've had many lawyers say to me, well, the couple is separated now, so domestic violence is really an adult issue. So how are the children affected? Well, the children continue to be affected. Obviously, the abusive parent, they continue the abuse, and there's overlap between the abuse of a spouse and abuse of children directly, other than just the exposure by itself. The abusive spouse, who is controlling in a variety of ways, may be directing that same style directly to the children. So the children are being exposed to this repeatedly. The parent who's the victim may feel undermined by the abusive partner because of the domestic violence, and their relationship with the children may be compromised. And again, I often think about how difficult parenting is. I mean, parenting is one of the most difficult jobs you can get. And I think about what it's like to be a parent when you're a victim of domestic violence, because you're dealing with the psychological and physical aftermath of domestic violence, and it doesn't make you able to parent at your very best. So we also have to look at that impact.
For a community that wants to help a family navigate issues with domestic violence, and particularly help children who are exposed to domestic violence, what interventions are possible? How can the community intervene to support a family who's having these experiences? Dr. Baker?
The good news is that over the last 20 years or so, a great deal of attention has been focused on developing interventions to help children. The not so good news is that not all of the services that we're going to describe are available in all jurisdictions at this time. But in many communities, children who've been exposed to domestic violence benefit from trauma and violence-informed counseling. And sometimes they go or receive this counseling in groups, and sometimes they experience it individually. We know now that counseling programs that include a component for mothers and children are highly recommended, and especially when they include a component that addresses the trauma that both the adult victim and the children may have experienced. We also know that some children and youth that are experiencing traumatic stress or complex trauma, they may require longer term and more intensive counseling or support, or what we often refer to as trauma-specific interventions.
Dr. Jaffe?
Judges play a critical role in setting the stage for various court interventions, and obviously it all begins with decisions that recognize the impact of domestic violence on children. Judges can play a role by making decisions that create a sense of physical and emotional safety for children, ensures there's some structure and predictability in children's lives. Judges' decisions on parenting plans ensure that there's a strong bond that continues to be reinforced with a non-abusive parent, as well as to siblings and sibling relationships. Obviously, children need to feel free from being responsible for the care of their parents, so decisions that judges make that allow those protections, security, and stability are critical for children. And when there is contact with the abusive parent, obviously there has to be protection for children's physical and emotional safety through decisions that may reinforce supervised exchanges or supervised visits. And ultimately, judges can have orders that also include the importance of counseling. So obviously, support programs for the abusive parent to address their role as an abuser when it comes to their parenting, and also counseling programs for mothers who may be victims to encourage them to seek support and get support in the community to help them in their parenting as part of the aftermath of domestic violence.
For children who have been exposed to domestic violence, what helps them overcome that exposure in the long term?
Children are resilient, and their resilience helps buffer them against adversity and helps them to navigate stressors such as domestic violence. Some factors that contribute to resilience, such as a child's temperament or their cognitive ability, are harder for others to influence. However, we now understand that the adults in the lives of children and youth, family members, teachers, coaches, and neighbors, can truly influence and strengthen resilience in children and youth. And how can they do that? Well, perhaps most importantly is by fostering healthy connections with others, but also by helping children to develop skills that enable them to better manage their thoughts and emotions and behaviors when they feel overwhelmed, anxious, or angry.
Children and adolescents benefit from many protective factors, as Linda was saying. I mean, obviously a key is a supportive relationship with a caring adult. Obviously the primary caregiver could be aunts and uncles or grandparents. It could be that special teacher or coach, big brother. And obviously having community support and engagement is critical. Obviously having access to sports teams, faith community, access to safe spaces is critical. I think Linda and I always say domestic violence is everyone's business. And when it comes to protecting children, it's going to take a whole village to protect children from domestic violence and ensure they're strong and resilient in overcoming these very adverse life events.
Thank you, Dr. Baker, and thank you, Dr. Jaffe, for joining us today and offering your considerable expertise. Centering Children is presented by the National Judicial Institute on Domestic Violence. a partnership of Futures Without Violence and the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, with the support of the Office on Violence Against Women, U.S. Department of Justice. Special thanks to Jennifer Arsenian and Breanne Smith for co-producing this program. Until next time, I'm Aaron Polquet.